星空を眺めている一人きりの夜明けもたった一つの心悲しみに暮れないで君のため息なぬて春風に変えてやる日の当たる坂道を自転車で駆け上る君となるした思い出乗せてゆくよララララララ口ずさむ唇を染めてゆく君の見つけた幸せ花のように
All right, Larissa Kozlov. I've just really enjoyed looking at your artworks recently, and I'm going to write something about it.
Yes.
The exhibition in Pinella.
I'm saying yes.
And, yeah. So we're going to have this yarn about it. It's really like a good look at how the world goes upside down and then tips up the other way and then tips up the other way again. Because that's kind of where we are.
I know.
Speaking of where we are, you know, where are you and who?
I'm on Boonwurrung country. So I live in Williamstown.
Okay.
So I'm on Boonwurrung country. And then my family going back is from Siberia on my dad's side.
Wow.
So they were during the revolution, they fled. And then they came across through China and Japan on foot and then to here.
Wow. So you come almost from like the North Pole, like just shy of it, to just shy of the South Pole.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's a bird here that, what's it called? It's a sandpiper and it migrates from Siberia to Williamstown once a year.
Yeah. Oh, it's where you are.
Yeah. So
what's it like when you sit with those?
Well, I'm not sure I've seen one because I've seen pictures and then I've seen what I think is one, you know, so I'm always looking for them because they're quite like nondescript looking birds, like they're little brown birds. They don't look. So I think I've seen them, but I'm super excited about seeing them. But I often ask bird watchers if they've seen them or I don't know. Maybe I need to get binoculars.
Mm. So this is like, so your family history has this. That's not just like one of those DNA testing websites that you send off to and like almost everybody, it's just a coin toss. They either tell them they're from Siberia or they're Native American.
Really? Oh, I didn't know.
I had some friends from Turtle Island who just, they sent their hair in to see what would happen. They sent dog hair.
They sent
a sample from their dog. And it came back going, you're this percent Native American.
I went back. I applied for this competition to go to do something as an artist. It was quite a few years ago, and I wrote up, I'll go back. Because they got, they had 24 hours to leave on the train.
Yeah.
And then it created massive trauma in our family.
Yeah.
It's like Dr. Zhivago, and people died on the way in the snow, and it's a mess. And so I thought, I'll go back, you know, I'll bring the Kozlov back home, you know. And then I won the thing and then I actually had to do it, which is amazing. So I just traveled. It's in the middle of nowhere. I just like traveled on the trains to the town, and the town was closed from like the 60s till about 1994 because it was like so no one could leave and no one could go in.
Oh, right.
It was amazing.
So this is like the first peoples there that are still there are like was the Kanti and we'll keep going, but like just to sum up your Kozlov, Siberian and you know from the North Pole, and then you finish down here at the South Pole at the bottom of Australia.
Yeah.
And there is that sandpiper that migrates with you.
Yeah.
And then you went back.
I went back
for a look.
Yeah, I went back for, it was like really amazing isolation, it took me 6 weeks catching the train. It's an amazing time to just, and I can't speak Russian. So, you know,
yeah.
Like you've got a connection, but then there's no.
Yeah.
It was so strange. It was like a beautiful, super introverted time, like open thinking time, which I've never had since, like, because, you know, my life and stuff. And so I sort of physically put myself back, you know, because we got taken out, and I sort of physically put myself back.
Yeah.
Wandered around and thought about it, reflected on lots of family stuff. I had a letter from my dad, had died like a few years earlier, and had a letter from him, and I sort of carried the letter there as well. It was like intuitive, you know.
Wow.
It was just amazing. It was really good. But also kind of almost comical as well, you know. It was sort of it was strange.
I'd love to go there if it wasn't winter and just like it sounds pretty cool in the like late spring, and you just go and hunt weasels and that.
Yeah, it's got this earthy.
Make your clothes.
Yeah, it's earthy still. You can still feel that.
Yeah.
And then all these villages, like, you pass by in the middle of nowhere, like, just, you know, totally reliant on, like, wood fires and forest-based, and just feels pre-modern life.
Mm-hmm.
You
know?
You just get a glimpse of it.
Yeah.
And then it's like there's sort of capitalism there in the markets and that, but it's a bit off as well. You know, like, I remember I bought a singlet, it had sequins on it, and it said "really thinks." You know, it's just this really weird item of clothing. I didn't wear it. I just liked the idea of it. It was such a strange message, you know.
Yeah, really thinks. Really sits there and watches all state media.
Yeah.
And agrees passionately thinking for myself, yes.
Good accent.
Well, then shot.
Yeah, and the ideologies, the history of ideologies there, you know, it's so heavy. These totalitarian ideologies that just ruin everyone's life, generation after generation. And so too much thinking going on.
It's just too much land to control, too much temptation for empire and
you
know, monarchy and things like that, you know, and always kind of ruined everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope you left your vape pen at home.
What does that mean? I'm laughing because it's such a funny idea for me.
Lots of people jailed from that, like having residue in their vape.
Really?
Why? You know, just like particles of medical marijuana in their baggage, and then off they go.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, particularly if they're a, I don't know. See, I so your art is very much a critique of you know, capitalism, consumerism, post-truth realities, you know, that aren't realities. And I don't know, the way I think I want to explore it in the writing is through like this idea I've got about ontologies and epistemologies getting mixed up. But because you know, you were coming from that point of view, you know, you're a target there as well. And you go into that place because, you know, anybody who, like, they particularly like to, you know, arrest people where there'll be high profile sort of, you know, international sort of passionate disagreements between, you know, the left and the alt center and the ultra right, you know, like if somebody's a woman of color, you know, LGBTQI plus person, you know, and there'll be that controversy and will stir up that, you know, civil war type disagreements.
And there's always
that's been part of the big disinformation campaign, and they know how to stir it up, you know?
Yeah.
That information warfare.
Yeah. There's big monuments. It feels, I remember thinking time always wins out, you know, like there's these big monuments and have all these weeds around them when they're sort of irrelevant. Like when they're put there, like huge, outrageous stuff, you know, like Lenin's head, like 6 meters tall, or these images, but then they're just sort of irrelevant now, and people pass them and ignore them, but they're still present, you know.
Yeah, and you're so grounded in that deep time with the past there, and you know all of the impacts of, you know, I think disinformation was invented there, like you know, by the czars when they were trying to stop feudalism from being disrupted, you know. So it's really interesting how you work.
Yeah,
it's coming through this kind of speculative future, you know, dystopian sci-fi but very much located in the present, but speaking in a past tense as if it's already happened. And with these sort of different visions of the way the world is tipped upside down, you know, multiple times.
Yeah.
The speculation and the thought tinkering that goes on becomes the reality, and then the reality rebels, and then the rebels become the assholes, and then it tips up again.
They change too, because that one that has was before AI. So I was talking about bad actors and stuff, and now it's got a different kind of meaning. So I'm trying to talk about these issues, but it's not like knowing everything. You just, you know, because it's going to anyway. So it's like you've got to suggest something that feels true and real.
Yeah.
It's not like a fixed thing anyhow. So in that format, you can sort of do that because it's playful and humorous. So you can try something that feels real, but it's not like, you know, an ideology or a concrete thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's it.
Trying to.
It's what you're looking at is the pattern of how this disruptive, you know, information and disinformation technology and industry, and you know, that industrialized information warfare.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the patterns of how that works, and historically it's always been the same. So you're able to, you know, replicate and project those patterns, you know, and if you have an inaccuracy on, you know, predictive stuff about where the technology goes, it doesn't matter. It still has the same effect.
Yeah.
So, I'm looking at two different artworks of yours.
Yeah.
I don't know. So you want to respond to the last thing I said, but then go through them.
Oh, it's just a really interesting point. It's true that it's eternal, like, because one, you know, it's like propaganda and lies and this mercurial thing, you know, it's like, it doesn't matter when it happens, if it's in the, you know, in an uprising hundreds of years ago or where. It's sort of, you know, like the state lying, you know, and I feel like at the moment is interesting because we're seeing those lies more exposed. It feels like in this moment, at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, I wish it was more, and I wish it, you know, but it just feels like something's happening interesting through our phones at the moment, just in terms of Gaza and stuff, of like the Western lies are being experienced a little bit differently than they traditionally would.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that they used to dominate. And I guess they got lazy and they didn't really upgrade their shit.
Yes, yeah.
Everybody else upgraded, and suddenly they're like, you know, they're coming third.
Yeah, they can't compete with the immediacy of, you know.
That's it.
People telling, and I read something interesting about lies the other day, because it was saying if you lie, then you give your power over to the other person, because you have to always perform for their view of you. You know what I mean? But if you're telling the truth, you don't have to perform for anyone. It's just, so the idea of performance is in those films quite a lot as well.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that the Westerners that are ahead of the game in that kind of strongman, authoritarian, ultra-right reactionary sort of sphere, like those who are more connected and allied, right, sympathetic to Russia, these seem to be the ones who are ahead of the game, ahead of the Western states.
Yeah.
You know, and have just harnessed an army of content consumers who then become content creators.
Yes.
Doing that work for free, you know.
Yeah. Right.
And so, you know, they have that, and the state never has that.
Yeah.
You know, the state has door knocking and bloody leaflet.
Yes.
And they're going, we got to combat this disinformation. I know. We'll get some doctor or like scientist to speak in a monotone through a bunch of bullet points that are fact checked. That'll get people excited.
It's not working anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't work. Even their lies are boring. Their lies have no story, no spirit, you know.
And unprofessional. Yeah. Like, you know, it's just blatantly unprofessional. Like, I think of, like, you know, the South African case, and you only report on the Israeli side, and not, you know, that's just unprofessional. Like, even I mean, it's totally racist as well, but it's just like, they just look like hacks, like the ABC, you know, like WhatsApp chat comes up about how you're going to get rid of someone or.
Yeah, yeah.
My gosh, they're, you know, even on a competency basic level, it's.
Yeah, it's not even, I mean, everyone says, okay, boomer, but I mean, they're at their level of proficiency and mastery in this contest is not even boomer level. It's like the silent generation.
Yeah.
Going on Facebook to lament that they don't get to see their grandkids because they're not allowed to say the N-word at the table. You know.
I was thinking, do they want to fail? Like, is there a part of them that wants to fail? You know what I mean? I don't know.
I think they do. I mean, you know, the big story is those kind of you know, revelatory end times kind of narratives that largely from the Abrahamic religions,
right.
But from others as well, you know, you know, even from, you know, India and from that side of things, there's this idea of these cycles of, you know, destruction and renewal and, you know, of a second coming of a deity and a time of retribution when everything gets burnt down and leveled and turned to ash, and then from that grows the next cycle and a new golden age of priests and kings.
What's your perspective on that? I'm interested to hear.
Oh, it's everything is spiritual narratives.
Yeah.
Everybody's guided by spiritual narratives. Yeah. Everybody cherry picks their entire, you know, their entire worldview. You know, they cherry pick this to sort of decorate their narratives.
Mm.
You know, and most of these narratives are spiritual.
Mm.
So, you know, even if you're a full blown skeptical atheist, you know,
I'm actually
a Muslim. There's no spirit at all. That's a spiritual narrative.
Yeah,
and they're a story for that. They have their stories. They have their saints. You know, through history, you know. It represented their sort of ideas of reason and progress, which is largely Western, and you know, they have a narrative, and so a spiritual or even anti-spiritual narratives, these are the things that guide everybody's worldviews, and so their interaction with the world is, you know, like increasingly tailored, bespoke, individualized, where they can cherry pick their own and bake their own version of that narrative.
Mm.
You know, and add their own stories to it.
But there's eternal. I'm Muslim.
You're Muslim.
Yeah, for 18 years. So which I, you know, kind of selectively, like a lot of people don't have known me for years and don't know that, and then others fine, you know, like it's not to hide, but it's also I'm so aware of the misinterpretation of it that's just sort of like not worth, you know, I don't want to kind of interfere with it through but also it's not like cultural capital or something, because it's so
that's it,
so central to how I experience reality and you know, and but yeah, it's true, like those eternal, even for atheists, those eternal like longing that comes up, you know, around like love and preserving life and flourishing rather than destruction, you know, like even, you know, atheists have this attraction towards something that's wholesome and generative and stuff.
Man, my neurodivergent son, he's autistic. He was at a swimming pool recently and decided to go around chucking everybody's iPhones in the pool.
Oh, wow.
And I just happened to be fortunate enough that they were all Muslims. So they were very understanding and very patient.
Oh, wow.
With
what
us
a moment.
Redressing, you know, those sorts of things, you know, you know, trying to get the new phones and all that sort of thing. It took a lot. They were really cool about it, and, you know, blessings on you and your family. And you know, we're all cool. So that was very fortunate.
I think we're seeing amazing example of Islam in Palestine at the moment, you know, like it's incredible. Like for me, that's I'm watching Palestinian people thinking that's the best of Islam, you know, like it's amazing, like the fortitude and the
grace.
Grace is incredible. You know, and even I had friends who aren't Muslim say to me, oh, tell me about Islam, because they're doing something different. You know, they're doing something different to anger and, you know, but at the same, you know, and so that's been interesting too, you know,
yeah,
experiencing, because it gets so hijacked, you know, by the Western narrative, you know, and it's.
Well, look, there's that longing for the rapture, you know, these rapture ideologies, particularly in the West, is that, I mean, they're kind of rejoicing at the moment that this is all happening there in the right place to fulfill the book, you know. They want Jesus to come back. And it's like, yeah, as most of the Zionists in the world are not Jewish.
Yeah.
Like they're liking to see all this happening there.
More lies.
They think it'll get closer to that final battle.
Wow.
And then sword mouth Jesus will come back and mess everybody up. And I don't know. What was it Trump's been saying? I'm your retribution. There'll be this retribution. There'll be this reckoning. And there'll be this reassertion of you know, this you know, privileged particular way of being in the world, and you know, this ethnicity and this particular brotherhood. It's I don't know, it's pretty full on.
Yeah.
But I guess where we're focusing is on the tools that are sort of getting people there to this place of longing for a set of circumstances which is completely against their best interests. Which is self-terminating, which is, speeding up, accelerating their own destruction.
Yeah.
And the destruction of their world.
Yeah.
And the destruction of their future for their children, who they are hashtag saving all the time from the, people who want some regulations in place, maybe, that stop the world from burning. People who want regulations in place to make sure everyone belongs or something like
it's
that.
A chance. Yeah.
No, that's grooming. We got to say hashtag save the children from that and, hasten the rapture.
It's a death wish.
Incineration of the world.
Anti-life death wish, you know.
Yeah.
Why do they, what's the attraction? I can't even imagine in my mind.
Well, I mean, the Quran is not exactly freaking much better than that, you know, except, I mean, and it's weirdly, I don't know. I can never get past that passage when I'm reading through. Like, I always get hung up on it, that this rapture will happen and then the faithful, you know, will be transformed and all their faces will be made white. Maybe that was just a translation that I was reading, but
yeah,
I should try some other translations. Because that bit's like, what? White? This is supposed
to be
white.
You can't take it literally. It's metaphorical, you know.
Yeah.
That's the thing. My entry point into it was, because culture, I was brought up an atheist, so I'd never have found my way there. But it was an experience of meeting Muslims and Sufism in particular.
Yeah.
Through that, like when I was a young person encountering that, and just a physiological response that was like attractive, like there's something here that's better. So it's really hard to, it's not an intellectual thing, but it's a metaphor as well, you know, like, because it's the state of your heart that's the thing.
Yeah.
And only the divine, you know, understands sort of our intentions and the state of our heart, which is
I think that happened on some level to my little son at the swimming pool.
Yeah, wow.
You know, because there's like 30 fellas, you know, 30 Muslims or like just men. Like, being playful men together, like in all the shouting and singing and challenges and just rambunctious play around this pool. It was deafening. And he was in it. He's like jumping up and down like any minute I'm thinking he's going to be like, oh, kind of thing. He's jumping up and down. And he got really excited and he was joining in as much as he could. And they were really including him in the play. And like I felt real safe with him there. And, you know, you could see him. He's swept up in like this spirit of something.
Yeah.
And then he just wanted to just join in and like give him a gift of throwing shiny things into the pool where they were playing. Unfortunately, they were all iPhones. Oh, anyway.
It's an amazing story. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, so I had this moment of intense joy of seeing him, you know, in a group of people and belonging. And then suddenly he's doing something horrific. But that's pretty much... he's five.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's our experience, our daily experiences.
Yeah.
You get like radically uplifted by something amazing that he does. And then he does something like, you know, smashes this very computer. So I'm looking at you through a bunch of cracks now. He smashed both of our laptops.
Wow. You know, I read...
And the TV and like everything.
Wow, so yeah. Is it only technology that he's interested in?
He craves that. He's addicted to tech,
yeah,
and screens. And that's all of his language, all of his everything has been learned through those things.
Mm.
You know, like that's been his way into the language, which is still very much just ritualized.
Right.
Pattern making at the moment with language. He's not there yet, but it's pretty exciting. Anyway,
I read your book, then I read Doppelganger at the end of,
so glad you read that. Yes,
that was so good. One after another was just like, but it's interesting that Naomi Klein is just a kid as
and
well.
So I've read Doppelganger and then come to your work, so one after the other there too. What a really good intro, like as a way into, as a lens for looking at your work.
Yeah.
What are the two, run us through those two artworks that we're going to be looking at.
And, yeah.
That I have to find, I have to try and compress all of these yarns down into 15 and 100 words about.
Yeah. All right. I'll tell you a few things. I love tangents and I'll keep talking about your son or something like that, which I like. some kind of helpful things maybe is like,
well, I mean, there's segues and then there's ways to terminate a thread, and it's good that we've got away from the rapture ideology thread.
That's too complex.
Through the vehicle of my son's experience of joyous Islam.
That's a beautiful story. A few things maybe helpful is, so all the footage is downloaded from stock. So there's these stock footage filmmakers and they're freelancers and they try and guess what the market will want for advertising.
Yeah.
And there's these websites with hundreds of thousands of clips and they're like maybe 10 seconds long and they're silent, or, you know, it's like, you know how we have so many goods in the world, more than we need. It's like the same with the clips. They're just like, how about this? And so I kind of scour through and put like little pieces together like a jigsaw, you know? And then
A great way to do like predictive futurism, though, because they're not cheap to produce those.
No, I found it cheap.
They're very professional.
I can't.
But to produce them.
Yeah.
So they would have to be making sure they were making accurate predictions so those images would be usable and therefore.
Yeah. So not only do they look, you know, they're the aesthetics of corporate capitalism, like that's the aesthetic for.
Mm.
Or the ideology, but they're also like a market. And
the
one I like, ironically, which is the cheapest, is like from Eastern Europe, you know, so it's sort of off, you know, it's like they've but not classy, like a bit wrong, like,
because they have Westerners. Have you ever, like, oh my god, there's always so many Westerners, like in China, for example. But then if you ever see like Westerners who are living in China and speaking Chinese, and then you talk to them, or you see them in Chinese media, they're always like, are you a real person? Like, I don't know what you are. Like, are you a cardboard cut out of a human being? You're like, you're talking, even in like old, like classic Hong Kong cinema, like martial arts movies, you see the Westerners in there and they're like, yes. I don't know.
They seem weird.
Whenever they pop up, it's like they're performing like a Westernaiety that is, you know, through this Asian lens. And it's just remarkable. I interviewed a fellow once for this podcast. It was like that. He was like, yes. Like, yes, that's very funny. You're making fun of, you know, totalitarianism here.
Maybe they're not actors, but
that
doesn't, you know?
Yeah, that's not the story. And then, you know, and it's like, I don't know, they're really, you know, just fascinating.
Yeah, I think of them like puppets, you know, like it's like a puppet show.
Yeah, so yeah.
All the clips are sitting there waiting. They're like wanting to be sold, you know, to help them.
Well, maybe it looks the other way. Like if Asians are looking at Western media and we have these representations of this, you know, like what is it? It's called an ideal minority or something like that, a model minority. Like Asians in the West are regarded as a model minority because they don't complain as much. You know, they shut up and get on with it, and they work hard and study hard, and you know, are competitive and useful, but not too competitive.
Yeah, the other thing is language is so weird. Capitalism, like model minority, or I would think like all the terminology for the market is really weird. Like the securities, whatever. I always look up those terms. I'm like, oh, they're so weird. They're so psychological. Like they're like psychological terms.
That's the
securities market, or I'm like, why are they called that? It's so unconscious, kind of.
No, it's weird. Like equity is my favorite economic term. That makes me laugh my head off. So I keep like getting away from this. Your things, these two artworks. We need to make sure people can sort of see these in their heads. So you're building them from stock footage. What was the first one called? And that was from 2000.
It's called Radical Acts.
Yeah, and so that was pre-COVID, the Radical Acts.
I made it in COVID. I made it in my...
All right, hang on. Which one's pre-COVID and which one's post-COVID? Or are they both post-COVID?
It's during COVID, and then the new futures is probably post-COVID.
Okay.
Yeah, but so lockdown. I made the other one in lockdown. That's why it was good. I could do it all on my computer, you know.
Radical Acts is during lockdown, and this is really interesting. It's really interesting at a time when radicalization was flipping the world, and then flipping it back, and then flipping it again. So, yeah, let's like walk us through it.
Yeah.
There's a narrative in both of these films.
Yeah, the story in that is that the climate scientists are really fed up with inaction on climate, and so they develop this pathogen that they put on office plants that affect the workers and make them not productive and playful, and you know, the opposite.
It makes them more inclined towards relationality.
Yeah,
it's the original idea.
Yeah,
this ends up though when they start doing their team building exercises, they just never stop, and they start just playing and playing and playing and looking after each other.
They forget what they're doing and they just play, and then that somehow frees up time for the scientists to get more media attention for their cause. So the thing that's weird, because it's stock footage, I have to make these weird leaps of logic.
Right.
Making it from scratch. So I have to find a way to like make it cohesive out of fragments, you know? And then the politicians get nervous, and so they need to distract the public by creating, you know, some exciting event, and they fake a mission to Mars.
That's right.
Yeah, because they can't afford it and they don't have the technology, but they sort of fake it with actors. And then the actors become unhappy, which was happening in COVID at the time, because all the casual workers weren't getting looked after. And
that's right.
The arts workers especially. So then they start to leak it, the truth of this facade. And then people pick up on it. What looks like a young activist picks up on it, or the news starts to tell that story. And then you sort of link that with a bigger problem, which is mass extinction and, you know, the whole project of mass extinction and climate. And then it says, well, what did we do? And then there's this ambiguous ending where I think it says we lay down radical acts of horizontality, which suggests
that's right,
nothing, or civil disobedience, like using kind of both, you know.
But they're all the shots are of individuals lying down in the middle of, you know, expansive landscapes.
Yeah.
Just individuals going somewhere and lying down, which is absolutely perfect metaphor for, you know, civil disobedience and activism now, is that it's all bespoke and individualized. everyone's in their own sort of space doing their own thing.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And in both of the films, you do bring the idea of actors in and how important they are. And yeah. They're always pivotal. And then they always shift because the illusion that they create and that they're conscripted and employed to create, you know, ends up shifting the world and then makes them unhappy. And then they somehow end up becoming the arbiters of reality and the new reality. And then they must be opposed. It just flips around and flips around. And this is really cool because that was during COVID was when, you know, all of the, that was the time of a sort of growing frustration in the arts community, but particularly in screen arts, film arts and TV, of, you know, the actors and screenwriters, you know, all becoming disenfranchised and bringing to the world's attention. You're starting to ferment this rebellion, which led to the big strike,
you know,
bringing people's attention to the way, like, these new platforms, you know, for media and particularly TV, were exploiting their labor and, you know, and taking shortcuts and doing this cookie cutter stuff with all the stuff that we're viewing. And also that, so the threat of that, that mass production kind of thing that, you know, just makes it not art anymore. But then also the capacity of AI to, you know, produce crappy scripts and take over from the screenwriters who are then employed to try and make the ChatGPT script makes sense, like at a lower rate, and then the, you know, the actors who, you know, that they could, then, you know, that,
oh, that's that, so well, weird,
it's looming that they can be completely replaced. All they have to do is you know, provide a few hundred hours of audio and video, and then, yeah, we don't need you anymore. We, you know,
it's a wild concept, isn't it? It's
can generate you, you know. So yeah, it always ends up with the. So you show both the films, the artists being used, to create the illusion.
And part of that's like.
And then rebelling.
Yeah, and rebelling. So what do you do with your agency? You know what I mean? And the tension of this hyper individualistic society, and, you know, the self-branding and, like, what do you do with your agency? Like, you know, because it's always troubled by the ego anyhow, and you're not that, you know, having to be an individual and stuff. So
yeah,
there's sort of like maybe inspiring things we can do with our agency, and there's sort of destructive things. It's like a mix, you know. It's like
yeah,
tension of our free will. It's constant, the tension of, like, what are we going to do? Like, what are we going to partake in? Or
you do something amazing, a radical act, and it creates change in the world and the change you were seeking, and it's amazing. Yeah. But then that becomes co-opted.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, you know, woke, you know, what that meant for African Americans at one time, you know, that was, you know, radical and you know, affirming and world changing, you know, a set of understandings and theories and story. And but then that was co-opted.
Yeah.
You know, and then it just became something ridiculous. That the most mentally ill people on the left were doing. And then it was completely co-opted the same way that fake news was by the right, as like a catch-all phrase to describe everything they hate. To the point where it didn't mean anything anymore. And then critical race theory, which has been the foundation of so much, you know, good structural inequality research, social research over decades, suddenly that means nothing.
Mm.
You know, it's just a demonized term, and it's, you know, everything becomes opposite and gets jujitsued around.
Mm.
So how does this happen? And this was the theory that I wanted to run by you. As we go into looking at the second artwork as well, this idea that ontology as, you know, the reality and a shared reality and shared story, you know, that people have, which may be elaborated somewhat, you know, and different for each person, but there is a set of general agreements about physics and reality and time and you know.
Yeah.
And just general ethics, like, yes, people should have access to food and shelter, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, your ontology, your reality, shared reality, you have that. And then you have the your epistemology, you know, which is your way of knowing rather than your way of being. So your way of knowing, you know, that's about truth in the end. It's how you make sense of the ontology, the reality.
Yeah.
So you have essentially, you know, ontology, what is real, and then epistemology, what is true. And these become confused because suddenly the epistemology, the truth is the new reality, and the truth is in motion. The idea of a reality becomes, that's problematic. But then, you know, people's, you know, personal experience, personal understandings that are constantly shifting and that are usually, you know, hiding some other agenda, you know, that those versions of the truth, that they then become the reality. Mm. That those are the things that we are adapting to and reacting to in, you know, evolutionary ways.
Because we're so, these narratives of the self are so dominating. Like we're fixated on them, you know, like in our phone, we're addicted to them.
Yeah.
And well, so
the evolutionary pressures are not coming from ontological signals.
Right.
In reality, they're coming from false, we're getting false signals. So we're responding and adapting and evolving to the noise rather than signal.
Yeah. And and representation, like this idea, we're so fixated on how we appear as a representation too. It's like a job, you know, you have to like publish.
Yeah. That's it. You're a, and that's where the Naomi Klein comes in. You know?
Yeah.
She did do that work years ago on branding, you know, personal branding, and you know, you've got to have no brand. Like that was the way to respond to that. But then everything gets jujitsu around. So suddenly
the thing that
Naomi Klein is Naomi Wolf. Naomi Klein.
I know. And I started calling her Naomi Wolf to my husband. I'm saying, Naomi, and he goes, Klein. Like it's like I started.
Yeah, yeah. And I did that the first time someone wrote it, made me aware of that book. You know, they said, have you read Naomi Klein's new book? And I'm like, oh, that's the beauty myth girl who's like anti-trans. She went, no, that's what the book's about. It's not her. I'm like, oh, crap. Yeah. And then I think that's a perfect example of ontology getting completely like colonized by epistemology, by malicious, you know, mendacious bloody epistemologies too.
Exhausting, yeah.
Manufactured.
That's the last bit of that film. You know, it's from Shakespeare, and it's like it gets delivered by the corporate man, but he does it badly because it's out. I've dubbed it, you know.
Yeah.
Badly, but it's saying, you know, this tension of being someone. Sometimes I'm a king. Sometimes I'm no one, and it's this constant tension.
That's right. I am the king, and then I'm, you know, and then I become dissatisfied with that and disenchanted.
Yeah, that's us.
Then I'm the pauper, and then I'm the pauper, and I'm like, no, this sucks. I have no power, and then I'm the king again. What the hell was that from? Was that from King Lear? Or
yes, yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Right, I hope I've got that right. How do we? Yeah,
it's definitely not Henry V.
Probably on.
Because
find it beyond my.
He was not that. I liked his speech better. A gentleman of bed in London town will think themselves accursed that they weren't here for St. Crispin's Day and the big battle. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Especially when Kenneth Branagh does it. That makes me like,
They're so, they're the eternal. That's maybe I get the words mixed up. Ontology, eternal truths, you know, those. That's eternal truths. And I'm on. But, you know, going back to activism, this is interesting, you know, because I've heard some of the things you say about, because I've also been involved in activism and using my body and stuff for about 5 years. And that's a really interesting experience because you have to, as a white person, white, you know, middle-class woman, you have to break through this sort of social conditioning to do it. And it's really hard, you know, but then breaking through, because I've done stuff for climate, just, you know, sitting down and locking on, stuff like that. And because I just had a feeling, because I've also got a kid, that like it's probably an effective thing I could do, you know what I mean? Because I can represent, like go and be, say something on the news, and I don't, it's a different kind of look, you know, it's like, and for me, it's worth a try, you know?
Yeah.
But that's a, I know the ego is always in there messing with everything, but to actually go ahead and do that stuff, I found, you know, just such a hard experience, but then simple too, because I'm like, why wouldn't you use your body? Why wouldn't you say no with your body, you know? But
yeah.
So I sort of participate in activist communities as well, because I don't want to lay down and do nothing. And, you know, I could, but I don't, I want to somehow try and do something. And then again, that's a real challenge. Like, you know, does it work, or do you just do it regardless? Because you, your intention is to try to help with something. And
yeah.
You know, so it's, I feel like it does expose you to a different sense of self that's quite uncomfortable, you know, and like,
Yeah. But then how to make sense of that in the world? I feel like the first, you know, the Radical Acts, that was the first one.
Yeah.
I feel like that was you trying to make sense of what was going on while it was still going on.
Yeah.
But then the second one was later, like, after that was settled, and we were in with through the looking glass now. We're in a post-rapture bloody reality, and up is down and down is up, and or the other way around, depending on your perspective, and everybody is walking in different dimensions of reality and failing to see each other and passing through each other, and you feel like, you know, the floor might dissolve into a quantum soup and you'll just sink through it at any moment. So it's already happened then. And then I feel like the second one is, I feel like it's better work, but I also feel like it's, it has a more unified, cohesive kind of thesis to it. You know what I mean? It's expanding, building on it. It's like the first one was the master's. dissertation. The second one was the PhD. So yeah, run us through that one.
The second one, is probably more absurd than the first one, because the first one is kind of logical political analysis. Yeah,
but it's more specifically about neurological tension.
Yeah, and maybe it's deeper too, because it is, like we're saying, free agency, and what do we do with our agency, and how is our ego excited by our agency and influenced by it, and our, you know, kind of this cultural gaslighting that happens too around how you should be a human, or how you should be a successful human, and, you know, what you should do with your time and what the benchmarks are, you know.
Yes, it's, but like, there's a technological kind of you know, intervention though, that's actually accelerating and facilitating all of that.
Yeah,
which is kind of exciting. Like, you got amazing stock footage with you know, holographic, you know, tech and neurological transformation tech and all sort of things. So anyway, take us through the story for that.
So the basic storyline. You can get a personality upgrade. It's a new development technology where you can just quickly and quietly and quite conveniently have your personality upgrade, so you have more charisma. And elite companies are offering this service, but it takes a little while to settle. So you have to go in a hotel room and let it sort of settle in, which is sort of, for me, I don't know, because he rubs his teeth. It's like he's taking cocaine or something.
Yeah. And then it happens. They do that with a lot of retreats and cults and stuff like that. Like, after your initial induction, or after your week of, you know, hypnotherapy and hitting a pillow and calling it your dad, then you have to take like 4 days, like, you know, in a motel or a resort or something like that. And it's part of the package. That's what it reminded me of. It's this,
And then you emerge, you're like a TED talker. You can do a TED talk, you know. Mannerisms, you've been, you know, so I reference TED talks. And then, but that's also being commercialized. So actually these new synthetic personalities are being traded on the stock market, and you can sort of bet on them like horses and stuff. And then there's all these hackers who were like slacker hackers who were nostalgic about when you just didn't have to try so much, you know?
Yeah.
And you could hide, you know, you could just hide it, which is sort of appealing, but also like, antisocial and sad. Like it's kind of a mix of the two.
That's it.
Things.
That's and, it.
Yeah, they intervene in the system because they put actors in the system. So then you don't know who's real or fake, even though we're only talking about fake things anyhow. But now there's fakes and fakes. You know, it's kind of multi-layered thing. And then it's such a complicated plot. But then the actors are worried because by that sort of uprising of the hackers because their culture is being undermined, like the extroversion and the performance that they enjoy, you know?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, so introverts and extroverts maybe kind of.
Yeah, yeah. But also that's their craft, like gone.
Because, that's their craft, you know, storytelling. So it's neither good nor bad, all these characters, because they contain sort of, you know, empowering things and utterly stuck, you know, elements as well.
So they the hackers like make copies of these, and then actors start replicating the synthetic personalities in the world.
Yeah, so
like they're doing it using their craft, and so then nobody knows who the genuine synthetics are and who the actors are. And then that disrupts the
market.
Yeah, the market. And
securities market. I've always used the word insecurity. I'm like, I muck that up in the script every time I think
of it.
The insecurities market falls apart. So, yeah, that mucks it all up. And then the hackers are happy. They're like, great, we can go back to computer games and eating chips and and being passive. But then the actors get into their system and start hacking their system with like discourse, you know, like kind of busy mind, excited around actor networking theory, which everyone talks about where I work. You know, there's that
actor networking theory.
Everyone's excited by the agency of, you know, everything, which I understand, but it gets interpreted in such a weird way in art where I work, you know. Still talking about the artist individual authoring things. Like it's not a real engagement with something like that, if you know what I mean. So and then they hack the system and they bombard the hackers' sort of world with like and noise and ideas and discourse and, you know, opinion. So
collectivism becomes disempowering and becomes like, you know, in service of capital. rather than a challenge to it.
And then the end person who does the Shakespearean monologue is talking about just this idea of having to be someone, like our sort of attachment to being to something in particular. And it could be a king and it could be no one. And like they're sort of like overconfident, underconfident. They're all problems, you know, because why do we have to be something within a hierarchy with status or not having status or, you know, like, you know, we can be humans, but why does it have to be a representation or something that, you know, has a ranking or has, you know, authority or has, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe that works better because I don't know all the answers in it. So, you know.
It just poses, like it's following a pattern historically that's informed by your deep time connections, you know, to another hemisphere, you know, and informed by your understanding of deep time and then going through to just, you know, 500 years ago with the Shakespeare side of things and then, and then coming right through and observing the patterns of upheaval.
Yeah, because
also informed by your faith as well and, you know, the doctrines of that faith. You know, all of these things end up allowing you to have this sort of patterning and this capacity to track the patterns and then extrapolate into like what are the sorts of things that come next and how can I kind of lampoon and exaggerate that in order to highlight, you know, where this keeps going, this constant flipping around of worlds.
Because the ideologies always fail. They failed my family, you know, or not that we were invested in one or the other, like, you know, I kind of like, but like the ideologies or, you know, when those totalitarian ultimate big ideologies come in, they always exclude people or create harm or, you know, kind of, they don't work, you know? And so it's a lot to that as well about like thinking about the ideologies of different times and how they try to control the people and they always fail, you know, but it's messy and painful in between all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, these are basically all of these ones, all of this, you know, monotheistic, monocultural kind of ideologies, you know, they're necessary for a growth-based economic system.
Yeah, that's so true.
If you wish to concentrate power and to scale the power and extraction and, you know, control of lands, increasing it further and further, especially if you've got such a massive landmass like Eurasia. I mean, inevitably, it has to be all based on, you know, whom you can exclude.
Yeah.
And whom you can, even then when you develop a core insider group, it's like, you know, whom and how you can exclude and keep moving those goalposts in order to create more and more outsiders. To produce conformity and, you know, to be able to project an other to justify killing.
So true,
in the name of the machine, you know.
That's exactly, that's all the links. Other person I love is Charlie Chaplin. I love, that's it.
Oh, yeah.
I love Charlie Chaplin. Like, it's a...
Yeah, yeah. The Dictator.
I feel he did it, you know.
It was amazing.
Amazing, those films. And well,
especially because there was a feedback loop between him and Adolf too, you know.
I know, and he
was a fan and like copied the mustache and shit.
I know, genius. So, but everything, the way he performs status, like in this beautiful comical way, it's right in, it's, you know, say I was trying to make something like my son could enjoy as, and it could be analyzed, you know. Same like Charlie Chaplin, anyone can watch, my son loves that. He can watch it too. And he understands like the sort of ridiculousness of adults and their sense of status and self-importance and how modernism like, or what, you know, just like rationalizes humans and turns them into machines. And I absolutely love that stuff. I think.
You know who gets Chaplin? It is freaking Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
Nailed that performance, man.
Wasn't that amazing? Nuance.
That was when he's like, no, man, your quality, Robert. And then he's doing like freaking Iron Man. And you know who he nailed there? Was Elon Musk.
I haven't seen
him. No, not Elon Musk. The aspirational like alter ego of Elon Musk, like who Elon's trying to be. You know, nailed that and the idea of the unilateral billionaire and the you know the benefits. Trickling down of adequate defense and you know excellent technology that'll all happen if we you know allow these guys to not pay taxes or be regulated anyway. He nailed that personality.
I think if you perform this stuff, that's what my films do. They perform it if accessible way. You perform it and then the facade becomes
you
can see. And
so how will this be curated? Is it going to be like videos playing on a loop with audio coming out of speakers, or will it be a headset and press play kind of?
Yeah, it'll be in a room, like a big projection. And I added, first time ever I added closed captions because I was feeling it was a bit, if someone comes in and they're deaf, then they can read it for the viewers. So just added all those last few weeks. And because it's a public gallery, I'm super happy it's in a regional gallery. It's always nice to like get in Melbourne. And so it'd be like just running on a loop one after another.
Yeah.
I mean, they might be weird. They come in halfway or something, but they could watch it cycle through maybe and catch it. They can't press play from the beginning. So that's might be a bit.
Benel is an extraordinary place for the arts. Like I've been watching that with interest.
Yeah,
over a few years, right in the middle of Tongrong land, and like a explosive, like a flourishing, you know, arts culture, you know. So there's two very flourishing economies in Vanilla. This is the arts and ice, which is it's not something I'll laugh about, but you know, it's there's a problem. Yeah, it's such an amazing, you know, place of contrast. You know,
I'm going to go visit. I'll do an artist talk up there, and I'm looking forward to it.
Have you never been?
I went, like, on a holiday when I was a kid a long time ago, and I can't remember it. Yeah.
Right.
I remember driving there, like, epic drive and vague memories of it. But, yeah, it'd be good to keep It's been a long time.
Well, hot insider tip, there's yabbies in the lake.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I tried to catch some with my son on holiday. And
so take your
I didn't get anything. Like, oh, they got close, but then I didn't know, you know.
Yeah.
Well, they, you know, and bits. Oh, I got one. It was too small. That was it. That was in, yeah, but I'm excited. Yeah. Sounds good. Maybe I'll take him and have a go. Yabbies in the lake.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, sit between there and Shepherd and, you know, compare and contrast. It's an interesting sort of place. Anyway.
Yeah.
Now, that looks like that's it. We're going to have to wrap it up. I got to get back to my babies.
Yeah, good luck with the phones and, you know, whatever has
to the That's phone. All good. Mubarak, Mushtaq, Talib, call out for you fellas. You're good people.
Made it easy for you.
Yeah. It was not. It could easily have been, a really awful experience.
Yeah,
and a conflict. I had conflict there anyway. Like the very next day, we're there at the pool, and there's a fellow who's like waiting outside the pool for like an hour while we're in there, and I didn't know what he's doing hanging around. And he finally got out and he came and yelled at me that, you know, for making him wait for too long because he didn't want to get in the pool with Abos, he said to me.
No way.
Yeah, and he was just screaming at me, and I was like, there's a lot of weird stuff. I've been called the A word and the C word, C-O-O-N, three times since the referendum happened. And, you know, and that's like, I don't know, it would have been three times in bloody 5 years before that. You know, there's a whole shift in the world, and that there is no Overton window anymore. It's an Overton frickin' portal, and it's growing bigger. And there's other dimensional shit coming through, like from the 1950s, that's, you know, not helping.
Yeah,
our reality has shifted.
Yeah,
our ontology has become our epistemology, and our epistemology has become our ontology, and everything's upside down, everything's up for grabs. Yeah. And there are demons here.
Did you see the cook, this the cook statue that came down at St Kilda this morning?
No, I did not. I was too excited about the. I'm still too excited about the one in Cairns.
They got an
ankle. Like bitching ankle, about for three decades.
Is it ankle grind or angle grind?
Angle grinder. Yeah.
They ground it off and it's on the ground. And when they write the colony will fall and it's on the ground. I was posting it ironically on my phone. I said, find me a better artwork than this, like visually.
Mm.
Like, I know it's not an artwork, but my God, like, it's incredible. Like, it's just this statue lying down, these little feet on the thing, like, cut, and this, like fall, you know. It looks like it's fallen. It has fallen, but it's like the colony will fall. And that was,
wow.
Like, the best thing of my day today was, like, you know.
You know the, did you ever watch Black Comedy?
Little bit.
The show when it was on.
Yeah.
You know the like the little gay fella?
Yes.
It's like, you know, Yeah,
so funny, yeah.
Yeah, that one. He I can't remember his name off the top of my head. That's terrible. Sorry, butter. But anyway, he was he did the best Captain Cook art I've ever seen. It was just a series of still photographs. That was just, it was him in a Captain Cook suit, like just vamping it up.
I look it up.
And his face, I can't help it. He makes me laugh every time.
Yeah, that's a performance again, isn't it? It's like if you perform the thing, it's going to be really.
It's brilliant. But then they gave him his own show.
Yeah.
And it sucked.
Did it?
Yeah, they just gave him a game show. And it was like he just had writers who were just, anyway, I don't know. It was kind of like he was, you know, directed to commercialize that and to just kind of replicate, you know, like the stuff that was successful because he was doing it, you know, from something organic. And then I don't know, it didn't work.
Like the play, if you can do it and it's play, it'll
work.
When it comes work, then it's really hard. And also,
if you turn art into a game show, that's what you're going to get.
Yeah. And also, How much can people produce? Like, it's so slow, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
with your when's your next book? It's like, oh yeah. My God, you have to grow something in between.
Yeah, and that's it. Well, here's this cycle and the turnaround. You know, if he came out now with a parody of a game show, then that would be funny.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then, but then after a while, that would become, you know, just irony and just hate speech hiding behind irony, and then that would be bad again.
Yeah.
And then you flip it another way. Everything just
like,
flip. Representation, re-representation, re.
Yeah.
And then Pepe the Frog goes re, and it's all over.
Mm. Yeah.
But speaking of over.
It's over, yeah. Thank you so much.
Sissy, I've been trying to wrap this up for 5 minutes.
I know, but you've got no hope with me because I love talking to you, and I'm so happy you're writing about it. I thought it was a bit of a long shot, to be honest. And so when you said yes, I was like, oh.
It's just great. I clicked.
That's great.
I don't usually click, but I clicked and I went, no, I'm in.
Oh,
and
thank
you. And it's vanilla. It's vanilla, and I'm fascinated with vanilla.
Yeah, awesome. All right, that's well, funny. It'll be the work and your writing together, and so that'll be really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me know if you need anything else. Any more information?
Yeah, I will. We'll yarn.
Yeah.
All right. See you later, and I'll see you at the launch, hopefully.
Yeah, awesome.
Bring your family. Yeah. I got in-laws there, so, you know.
Oh, do you really?
So I'm going to stay. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. All right. Take care.
I'll see you there.
See you.